We recorded this Life's Little Mysteries episode on April 28th, and we did it while self-isolating at our homes because of the novel coronavirus. Many of you are probably doing the same thing.
So this may sound a little different from our earlier episodes. You might hear some background noise we usually don't have in the studio, but of course that's part of the new normal that we're all adjusting to as we stay home to help flatten the curve during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Of course, the new coronavirus and COVID-19 are very much on everybody's minds, and Life Science is covering the latest news, so you can find updates on our website from every state in the U.S., from the CDC, and the World Health Organization, and from researchers around the world.
But we also hope that by continuing to bring you Life's Little Mysteries, we can all continue to be reminded of the amazing science that's all around us.
Thanks for listening. Keep safe and stay healthy. Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, editor-in-chief at Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a senior writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and technologies that we use every day.
Each episode of this podcast introduces mysterious questions, and we think the answers will really surprise you.
We'll also hear about cutting-edge research in labs and in fieldwork around the world to answer these and other intriguing scientific questions.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll take a closer look at a mysterious and fascinating group of web spinners, spiders. So I'm pretty creeped out by spiders.
One of my sisters is terrified of them, but that's never been an issue for me. And I'm not, you know, like I'm not, you know, I don't want to downplay it. But at the same time, I think spiders are fascinating. And I know it can be hard to overcome these, you know, fears of certain kinds of, you know, certain kinds of animals, certain kinds of insects or arachnids or but at the same time, there's so much about them that's awesome. So with that in mind, you know, understanding that some people may not love spiders, I hope that maybe by the end of this episode, people may be a little more curious about them.
Have a little more respect more than fear for spiders. And, you know, I'm not afraid of spiders to the point where I can't look at photos of spiders. I find photos of spiders to be pretty amazing when you can see them up close and just all their weird intricacies.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like there are just so many details about their bodies that are just really just, you know, you don't see them in other animals. It's really fascinating to look at.
I think that's probably the reason we see them so much in pop culture, you know, from kids.
Oh, yeah.
Kids stories like Charlotte's Web. Everyone knows.
And that's a friendly spider. That's
yes.
A very benevolent spider.
That spider is protecting the pig. But then we have another kids movie with pretty creepy, scary, almost human-like spider, Aragog.
Right, right. And Aragog is also the leader of hundreds, if not thousands, of large spiders. Some, you know, like some of which are really, really huge. And, you know, and of course, Ron Weasley, you know, he's got a very, you know, he's definitely got a spider problem.
Right, exactly. So Harry Potter's spider is pretty creepy, scary, and for good reason.
Right. But then, of course, you know, you've got Spider-Man, who, you know, was bitten by a radioactive spider and has spider superpowers. And, you know, people think that his powers are pretty cool. So why don't you think they're equally cool when spiders have them? Because that's where his powers came from in the first place. So what are spiders? When we talk about spiders, what are we talking about?
Spiders represent the largest group in the arachnid family, but not all arachnids are spiders. So scorpions and ticks are also in that family.
Right. Okay. So then what makes a spider a spider?
Well, some of the creepy intricacies we were talking about make spiders spiders. So spiders have eight walking legs.
Okay.
And they also have two body parts, the cephalothorax and the abdomen. And the abdomen is usually where they have their silk spinning organ. So not all spiders make webs, but all spiders can make silk. They all have this spinneret or this weird silk spinning organ.
Okay. And they also have a lot of eyes. Lots of eyes. But not all spiders have the same amount of eyes.
Yeah. So most of them have between 6 and 8 eyes. And they also have this pair of leg-like structures that are tipped with fangs, and they're called chelicerae. Mm-hmm. Spiders generally use those to hold their prey, and while they use the fangs on the tip to inject venom into their prey.
And spiders have been around for a really long time.
That's right. They go back at least 380 80 million years. So they've been on Earth, you know, before the dinosaurs were here.
So spiders have been around for a long time, or at least the arachnids that first gave rise to the spider family date to 380 million
right.
years ago.
And I guess their ancestor arachnids, they call them thick-waisted arachnids, which I think is sort of cool because now you can sort of see their little waists almost, I guess, between the cephalothorax and their abdomens.
Right.
But I guess a long time ago, it was just this big round blob, a thick-waisted arachnid.
Well, since then, they've diversified like crazy. There are so many species of spiders.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
the estimate is between 40,000 and 50,000, and there may be actually twice as many that have not yet been discovered.
That's pretty incredible. And spiders have incredible diversity. You know, they range from one of my favorite spiders, in at least in imagery, the world's biggest spider, the Goliath bird eater spider. And this spider is, you know, it's furry or it's hairy. It can be 12 inches across.
I'm guessing it's big enough to eat birds. with a name
well,
like that.
Yes. Apparently, though, this spider doesn't eat birds frequently, but it can eat birds.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and the smallest spider is the Samoan moss spider, which is itsy bitsy. It's just, it's 0.011 inch long, this little guy. So big range in size.
Right, with 50,000, you know, an estimated 50,000 species around the world, you know, you would expect that there would be just a wide range of diversity in just in sizes, in habits, in colors, in behavior, and so what are some of the other spiders that we know about?
Well, some spiders eat bats apparently, and one scientist or a group of scientists did some research, and they found that these bat-eating spiders are actually all over the world. So they're more plentiful than scientists thought, and most of them are orb-weaving spiders.
Okay.
And so they're not eating giant bats. They're eating the small baby bats.
Well, yeah. Well, bats are a pretty diverse family, too. So there are a lot of bats that are on the small side.
Right. And so some of the spiders apparently actually attack and kill the bats actively, and others wrap them up in their web and let these bats starve or dehydrate and eventually die. And then they eat them.
Mm. Well, speaking of webs, there's also a lot of diversity in the way that spiders use their silk-making organs because, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the spiders that you see when you're, you know, in your backyard or when you're out on a walk, you know, you see these webs and they're very beautiful, but that's not the only way that spiders use their silk.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a spider called Darwin's bark spider, and this spider can extend its web 80 feet across a river, and so it uses its silk to suspend a web. And this web can be 10 times stronger than Kevlar and uses it to catch food, insects.
Yeah, and people are impressed by Spider-Man, you know, using webs to swing between buildings. This is actually like the idea of a spider, something the size of an actual spider spinning a web to extend 80 feet across a river is pretty impressive.
It's amazing. And to be that much stronger than Kevlar.
Well, yeah, right. And they can also, spiders can also make tools out of their silk. So there's a triangle weaver spider, which actually uses its silk to make a slingshot.
Oh, amazing.
And then it spins a triangular web for its prey to get caught up in.
Yeah, that one is pretty amazing. And that one does remind me a little bit of Spider-Man because it's sort of, it walks backwards while it's holding part of its web to sort of build up elastic energy. And then it lets go and basically wraps the prey up in its web. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Right. Oh, and then there is actually a recent discovery in Peru, which we've written about on Live Science, about the biologist who discovered it was calling it a mini Stonehenge because it was these little silk pillars that were built in a circle around this central tower. And for a long time, people didn't know, you know, like what animal had made this. And it was only recently that they actually were able to observe little spiderlings hatching from that central tower. So, you know, they still don't know how it's built and they don't know what exactly it's for, if it's, you know, if it's a way of protecting them against predators, if it's a way of camouflaging them, if it's a way of keeping food in that the mother spider, you know, has inside there for the spiders to eat once they hatch. So that's all something that's still being figured out.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. We have video on Live Science, and just to see that little tower in the center, it really looks like a miniature Stonehenge. It's pretty cool. But more web, amazing web making spiders, the Tetragnatha spiders, which are actually called stretch spiders, they can create these long, 1,000-foot long blankets that basically kind of cover shrubs and things along the coast. And at first, scientists didn't know what they were doing, but the spiders are actually mating underneath and their webs are used to sort of catch insects while they're mating, I guess. So they have an after mating meal, a snack.
Right, right. But it's not just the webs about spiders that are amazing. There are these spiders called peacock spiders, and they are known not for their webs, but for their color, because they are beautifully colored and they have all these different patterns and for their dances. So the combination of these colors and patterns and dancing is something that they use as part of a mating display.
Yeah, they are pretty amazing. I think it's called their abdomens or their rear ends where these designs are. Some scientists call them the world's smallest rainbows because they're beautiful.
Yes. Oh, and there was even a new species that was discovered really recently where the pattern and the color on its butt was almost like a Van Gogh painting.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The Starry Night.
It's totally cool.
Yeah.
And we will talk about more about peacock spiders' amazing butts.
Yes.
A little later.
Yes. And they are amazing. But then, you know, and peacock spiders are really, really tiny. But then you have the big spiders like tarantulas, and they do something that's also pretty amazing to see.
Oh, yeah.
They actually molt their exoskeleton.
Yeah, and during this molting, they can actually replace organs. So they can replace genitalia, they can replace their stomach lining, and they can also...
See, I did not know that.
I didn't either. And they can replace lost limbs. So that's pretty...
Wow.
Yeah, that's a super spider.
See, I thought they were basically just... Yeah, I thought they were just peeling the exoskeleton off, you know, it's like
exactly.
You take off a glove. But no, they can actually regrow parts of their body. That's amazing.
And some tarantulas actually migrate. I think you wrote about this, Mindy, this migration that was happening in Colorado.
Yes. You know, if you think one tarantula is amazing, then how about thousands of tarantulas that are all traveling to look for mates in late August, early October? So that's something that happens in this one part of Colorado along a 1 mile stretch. And it's not actually, okay, it's not exactly like a blanket of
right.
Thousands of tarantulas because, you know, tarantulas are solitary. So, you know, they're not traveling together. They're maintaining social distancing. But thousands of them do follow this route and they do it every year and they do it to look for mates. And it's quite a sight.
And spiders also, while we're saying they're incredible for all of these intricacies, all of these amazing behaviors, they actually do form an important part of the ecosystem on Earth and the food web. They eat lots and lots of insects.
Yes, that's right.
And these insects can be agricultural pests. So they're helping crops. Animals that eat spiders are relying on that protein. So they are important for life on Earth.
Right. So, you know, this is for people that are, you know, that are afraid of spiders. You know, sometimes you hear people say, well, you know, well, what good are they? Because they're so scary. Like, well, this is what they're good for. They actually perform a very important function. And they're an important part of biodiversity.
Exactly.
But one of the most intriguing things about spiders, and this is something that's possibly at the foundation of people's, you know, fascination or fear with them, is their venom. Venom is something that's common in spiders. Most spiders have it. And that brings us to our first mystery, because there is a long-standing, widespread myth about arachnids known as daddy long legs, that they are the most venomous spiders, but also that they, even though they're super venomous, they can't bite people because their jaws are too weak. So the subject of today's mystery is, are daddy long legs really the most venomous spiders in the world?
So when we're talking about venom, is venom the same thing as poison, or what makes something a venom?
Well, this is actually something that let's just clear this up right now. There are no poisonous spiders. To call an animal poisonous, that means that they have a toxin, they produce a toxin that would affect you if you ate them. But animals that have either fangs or claws or stingers that inject a toxin are called venomous. So spiders are, they're venomous, not poisonous, just to clear that up. And the venom is very widespread in spiders. Most spiders have it, and it's usually they're multi-ingredient cocktails, and they can vary from species to species, but for the most part they include neurotoxins, which will inhibit the nervous system of a prey and will, you know, stop their breathing or paralyze them. And then cytotoxins, which liquefy tissue, and that allows the spider to be able to slurp them up like a milkshake.
Okay, that's creepy.
Sounds more delicious if you're a spider.
So are most of these spiders with venom, are they harmful to us?
put it this way, of the 40 to 50,000 spider species, only about 25 species, which is 1/20 of 1%, produce venom that's capable of causing illness in humans. So the answer to that is you know, the fraction of spider species that are actually able to harm people with their venom is very, very small.
That's incredible. Just thinking, because spider phobia, arachnophobia, is one of the most common phobias. That's just interesting.
It's so unearned.
Yes.
Okay, but of those venomous spiders, where do daddy long legs fit in?
So you were saying that this is a widespread myth, that these arachnids are the most venomous spiders. And what do we know about that?
So we're talking about daddy long legs. So first of all, we should clarify, what are daddy long legs? And what's confusing about this name is that daddy long legs describes arachnids that have small bodies with very long legs. So they have a leg span that's much bigger than their bodies. But the name daddy long legs actually refers to two arachnid groups. So there's one called the Opiliones, or harvestmen, and this is about 6,000 to 10,000 species of arachnids that live around the world. They are most diverse in Southeast Asia, and even though they are eight-legged arachnids, they are not spiders.
Oh, but they look just like spiders, yeah.
I know, there's some confusion there, because they do have the eight legs, and they do actually look like a lot of spiders, but they're actually more closely related to scorpions and mites.
Okay.
That's the Opiliones, daddy long legs. Then there's another group called falcids. And daddy long legs are also in this group. And these are true spiders. They look alike. And they are you have arachnids in both groups that are called daddy long legs. But only the falcids are true spiders.
Okay, so what's the difference between them? And which one am I seeing in my house that I think is a daddy long leg?
Okay, well, they look alike, they have similar names, but the big difference is that Opiliones do not have venom glands. So those are the harvestmen, those you do not have to worry about. The falcids are venomous predators, so those are the ones that do have venom.
Okay, and so are the falcids, are those daddy long legs harmful to us?
Well, they do have the idea that their fangs are too small or too weak to bite people. Their fangs are actually structurally similar to the fangs of the brown recluse spiders, so which are very widely known to bite people.
Yeah.
So in theory, yes, they can penetrate human skin.
Okay. And so what about their venom? So when they do penetrate, is it going to harm us?
Well, that's the thing, because these daddy long legs, they actually don't bite people very often. So there's been very little research into their venom toxicity. But still, this myth is really widespread. In fact, it was so widespread that the show Mythbusters with Adam Savage actually put this to the test in an episode in 2004. And this is kind of a big deal for him, because apparently Adam Savage is really scared of spiders. So
okay, you have to describe this test.
Okay, so you have, you know, how do you figure out if the venom of a daddy long legs, and this is a daddy long legs spider, of course, a falcid, is toxic to people? So first, what they did was they milked a daddy long legs so they could do chemical analysis of the venom, and then Adam Savage had a daddy long legs bite him to see the fangs could penetrate human skin. So they built this tube, like a plastic or lucite tube, and they put some of the daddy long legs spiders in there, and then he put his arm in there, you know, waved his fingers around to get them to bite him. And so they were able to bite him, but he described it as a mild burning that just lasted a few seconds. So that myth has been, you know, put to rest. So their fangs, yes, they can bite you, but their venom is not powerful enough to do any lasting damage, or really it seems like any damage at all.
Okay, so then what are the most venomous spiders? Like, which ones should we be most afraid of? Which ones pose the greatest threats to humans?
So of all the tens of thousands of spider species that are known to science today, there are only four spider families with bites that are harmful to people. And among those, there are definitely a couple of standouts.
Right. The Black Widow, for sure.
Right, right. And the Black Widow is, you know, it's very striking looking. You know, the females have that brilliantly red hourglass pattern. The females are also bigger than the males. So they're the ones with the bite that you have to worry about. So the females measure between 1 to 2 inches long, and males are about half that. And these spiders are found all over the world. They are among the most venomous spiders in North America. And chemical analysis of the female's venom has found that it is 15 times more toxic than a rattlesnake's.
Okay, that is creepy.
Except here's the thing is that, obviously a spider is a much smaller animal than a rattlesnake. So you think about, why do spiders evolve venom? They evolve it because they have to subdue their prey. How big is their prey? Their prey is much, much smaller than you are.
Little insects or...
Right. So the amount of venom that they have to deliver is fairly small. And also, unlike snakes, their prey is primarily insects.
Would a bite from a black widow kill a person?
Again, they have this very bad reputation as being super dangerous. But if you look at case reports, bites from black widows are very rarely fatal. Now, obviously, the risk is higher for, for very young children or for people that are very old or people that are sick or, immunocompromised. But in general, for otherwise healthy adults, the bite of a black widow is very rarely fatal.
That's so interesting because they just look so alarming. They're pretty dramatic looking, as you said.
But do they look alarming, or do you just think they're alarming because you've been hearing, for so long that black widows are dangerous?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
It's hard to separate it sometimes.
But, the next family of spiders that's harmful to humans, the brown recluse, is sort of the opposite. I mean, I don't know if I would know it was a brown recluse.
Well, that's the thing about brown recluse spiders is that they're not as, they're not as as showy as the black widow. They're kind of brown and drab. And they look very much like a lot of other types of house spiders. And this is, again, this is one of the issues with brown recluses having this reputation for being super dangerous. Now, they do have very potent venom. So brown recluse venom, it can cause tissue necrosis, which is tissue death. So, this family produces a tissue destroying toxin that no other spider group produces. But reactions can vary very widely amongst people who are bitten by brown recluses. So some people don't have any symptoms. Some have like a localized wound, so they'll have very localized tissue death, and then there have been some rare cases where the effects are much more serious, and in some cases venom can lead to kidney failure, but those are very, very unusual.
Okay, so I mean, it sort of sounds like their bad reputation is deserved. Is that true?
Well, yes and no. See, that's the thing, because the reputation that they have is really out of proportion to the danger that they pose. So in the US, for example, reports of brown recluse bites, people who work in poison control centers, people who work in hospitals, people who are spider specialists, who are all over the country, say that they get calls about, someone saying, "I've been bitten by a brown recluse." And this happens even in parts of the country where there are no brown recluses. Like, this happens in California a lot, apparently, and brown recluses just do not live in California.
Oh, so where do they live mostly?
So they live in the southern, central, and midwestern states in the US. So if you live in one of those states and you get bitten by a spider and it's very painful, there's a much higher probability that it's a brown recluse bite. But even there, bite reports are really, really exaggerated. So there was actually a study in 2004 that was published in the Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine. And it said that reports of brown recluse bites in South Carolina, where the spiders do live, just exceeded the number of known spiders in the state. Over 700 bites were supposedly by brown recluses were reported that year, but only 44 brown recluse spiders had been identified in locations around the state. So it's a little out of proportion to...
Well, I guess, you don't see... It's not like many people catch the spider. They feel it, or they might even wake up with a bite of some sort and think it's a spider. So I could see that, being common.
Right. And sometimes, sometimes something that people think is a spider bite is actually not even a spider bite. So the kind of tissue necrosis and the wound that people sometimes think is from a brown recluse bite is actually just a misdiagnosed MRSA infection, which is a bacterial infection that can also cause it. It's intensely painful. It can also cause tissue death. And so it looks kind of similar, but it's something very different.
And I guess both would require medical attention. So perhaps it's good people are calling. But why would people jump to the conclusion that they were bitten by a brown recluse in the first place?
When I was writing about this, it was actually about a story of a woman who had to get her leg amputated, and she said that it was because of a brown recluse bite, but she never saw the spider. There was actually no evidence of a bite. It was never diagnosed as a bite. And someone I spoke to said that that they think that one of the reasons is that it's almost like a badge of honor to say that you've been bitten by a brown recluse. It makes for a much better story, rather than saying, "Oh, I got a runaway bacterial infection." Just sounds a lot less impressive.
It really does.
So we mentioned peacock spiders earlier as some of the most colorful, spectacular spiders that you will ever see. And they're super tiny, but you may know them from videos on YouTube that showcase them waving around their highly patterned butts in very elaborate mating dances. But what exactly is the message that peacock spiders are sending with these fancy colors and patterns, not to mention their dances? So new research has some answers. And joining us today to talk about that is Kim Hickok, reference editor for Live Science and for our sister site, Space.com. Kim, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For those of our listeners who might not be so familiar with this group of spiders, what are peacock spiders?
So peacock spiders are these tiny jumping spiders that are native to Australia. And when I say tiny, I mean they're itty bitty, like a millimeter to about 5 millimeters long. They all fit comfortably on the top of your pinky nail. And they're called peacock spiders because the males have these colorful, iridescent rear ends that often have intricate patterns on them. And they raise their rear ends when they're courting a female, kind of like how a male peacock raises and displays his colorful tail feathers when he courts a peahen. So they have the name peacock spiders.
Now, I've seen this video footage and the colors are really spectacular. So you recently got a sneak peek at peacock spider science. And where did that happen?
Yeah, so I learned about this research at the Society of Integrative and Comparative Biology conference, or they call it, it's SICB, they call it SIGB, in Austin in January of 2020. And that's a conference where they have somewhere around 2,000 biologists go to the meeting and present their research. And this research was being presented by Olivia Harris, who is a graduate student and biologist at the University of Cincinnati.
And much like peacocks, male peacock spiders use their colorful displays for courting, right? So what does it look like when a male peacock spider courts a female?
So they do this kind of dance where the male hops around right in front of the view of a female, and he'll wave his fabulous butt in the air and hope to grab his lady's attention and impress her. And he'll also raise a leg on either side and sort of wave them back and forth. And it's really important for him to impress her immediately. And because the females are so much bigger than the males, females would actually rather eat the males than mate with them. So it's crucial that the males like do his dance as best and as fast as he can so that he doesn't get eaten.
But it's not just about showing off the fancy footwork. What did the new research have to say about the spider's body patterns and what that has to do with this elaborate courtship behavior?
Well, so Olivia Harris and her colleagues noticed that some of the designs on the male's flipped up rear ends looked kind of like the face of the spider's predators, which are wasps and mantises. And what's interesting about that is that the natural response of these spiders when they see something scary, like a predator, is to freeze and then just watch the potential threat. So the scientists were wondering if these male peacock spiders were flipping up their flashy rear ends in front of a female, and then when she thinks she sees a predator, she'll be scared stiff and then won't eat the male. And so instead, she just freezes. And so maybe that'll buy him a second or so to get his dance moves going for her and get her attention. But they needed to test that theory, so because humans are really good at seeing patterns that don't exist. So Harris and her colleagues looked at, or they developed a machine learning program or like a computer program that can compare the images of the spider's abdomens with images of predators and other invertebrates that would be in that environment. And so the computer was really good at telling difference between an image of the spider's butt and other invertebrates, but it messed up at least 5% of the time. And when it did make a mistake, the computer misclassified the spider butt as a mantis or a wasp's face, which are the predators. And they found out that the abdomen of some of those spider species, like there's one called Maridus aquilus, looks so much like a mantis face that the computer never got it right. And it always classified the image of that spider's butt as a mantis face.
That is really fascinating.
Yeah.
That's also a very interesting dynamic for a sexual relationship, terrifying your mate into freezing so that you can bust out your best moves.
Exactly. Exactly.
And after a male spider has terrified a female enough that she doesn't eat him, what's the next step for a successful courtship?
Well, the kind of tricky thing about this hypothesis is that the males might scare the female, but at some point they have to tell the female, right, that they're not a predator so that she'll be willing to mate with them. And that's because mating is not something the males can just force upon these females that are so much bigger than them. the female has to cooperate. So that could be why, after scaring the male kind of waves his legs around and kind of obscures that image that he's displaying. So maybe that's a way for him to tell her, like, oh, wait, I'm not a predator. I'm actually this male that you want to mate with. But that is actually another hypothesis that the scientists need to test. And so the researcher's next step is to observe this whole behavior in the lab and see if males with this predator mimicking display get attacked less often and are more successful at mating compared to males that maybe don't have an image that looks quite as much like a predator.
And peacock spiders are just so beautiful. You know, I wonder if they might be a gateway spider for people who are scared of spiders to just help them realize how incredible spiders are.
Yeah, they're really like little pieces of art in nature.
I've been talking to Live Science reference editor Kim Hickok. You can read her article, "You're Not Seeing Things, These Spider Butts Look Like Faces," on livescience.com. The link is in the show notes. Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. Today's spider mystery, "Are Daddy Longlegs Really the Most Venomous Spiders in the World?" is available as a Life's Little Mysteries article on our website, livescience.com.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our Live Science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally, it'll be another Life's Little Mystery.
Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audioboom as part of their Audioboom Originals Network.